seven verses. And the kind of the main themes of it here is that discipline is a sign of love. When your heavenly Father disciplines you, it's because he loves you. When your parents discipline you, it's because they love you. He also says that humans discipline their children, but God does it so much better. He also says that discipline is unpleasant and it's painful. But later on, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace. You know, part of discipline with a child is to reason with a child. You know, let them know very clearly where the boundaries are. Set the clear boundaries with the child. And it seems like that's all that would be necessary to discipline children. And I know we're all a little bit uptight because we're afraid DFACS is going to bust in the doors now and, you know, take away any of us that have ever spanked our children. I don't think it's illegal to spank your children in Georgia now, is it? No. Okay, good. I think we won't be arrested today. But I know this is a touchy subject. You know, because it's like, But reasoning with your children is a part. It's a first step in disciplining your children. I think it's funny when I see parents trying to reason with their child and that's all they got in their quiver. I think it's hilarious. We've all been in Walmart and the mom is down on one knee. And she's got the finger out. And she's like, "Little Herman, we discussed this before we left the house. This behavior is inappropriate, and your daddy and I want you to be a model citizen, so therefore you should stop." And they think that's all you got to do, and I find that extremely funny. Because it's not all you've got to do. I think it might work on one in a billion children. There may be one kid out of a billion that would say, "You know, Mom, man, thanks so much for pointing that out in my life. You're right. I apologize, and I can assure you this will never happen again." Super talk. Maybe one kid in a billion. But the rest of the billion, that if that's all you got, you're not going to make any headway at all. You know, imagine what we would be like on driving on the roads if traffic cops had only could reason with us. Like if you get pulled over for a traffic ticket, you did something wrong, you're speeding, and they drive these muscle cars that are like 50 times faster than yours, and they pull up behind you, and a 6'4" cowboy boots with the reflector sunglasses comes up, he's got a stick in his belt. He's got a revolver on his hip. He's got the ticket book. He says, "Mr. Sapp, do you know why I'm giving you a ticket?" And, you know, "Have you gotten a ticket recently? Tickets are expensive." It's like, "What happened to tickets? I mean, it's like $250 or some nonsense. And then you have to pay court costs? I mean, it's like crazy. It is a real deterrent to crime on the roads. I mean, you know, it's like, but that's why we don't just go crazy. If the cop didn't have a stick and a gun and a muscle car and all he could do was stand at the corner and reason with you as you drove past, we would be so nasty and sullen and belligerent. We would drive past the cop, texting, talking on the phone, putting on our makeup, you know, "Get a job, you're the worst." It's like because they had no authority, no bite. And when you try to just reason with a child, that's what you are. You got no bite. They're not scared of you. They don't understand where the line is. You know, you ever had a Mexican standoff with your kid? Again, Catherine. And a lot of my stories tend to revolve around her. I'm sure that's coincidental in the discipline. But Catherine and I had a Mexican standoff. She was about 5, I think. And you know those oscillating fans that go back and forth, and they have the plastic blades she just got it in her head that she wanted to stick her finger through the thing and touch the blade. And, you know, nobody knows if that'll cut your finger or not. I mean, it's plastic. I don't know, but I didn't want her to do it. So I said, now, Catherine, don't touch the fan. And she gave me some sass, you know, but I tried to reason. Don't touch the fan, honey. It'll hurt you. It'll cut your finger. It'll chop your finger off. You know, try to really get in there and reason. But she just kind of was like, she'd look at me, and she'd look at the fan. She'd hold her finger up. Has this ever happened to you? It's a Mexican standoff. And then she'd look at me, and she'd look at that. And I said, Catherine, don't touch that fan, or I'm going to whip your butt. Touch it. Just look straight at me. What could I do? Catherine, what did I do? Thank you. I spanked your butt. Do you still love me? Do you still touch fans? It works. It works. So you got reason, but then you have to introduce pain into the equation. Because just reason's not going to work. I mean, God reasons with us. He gave us 10 commandments. He says, here's how you're supposed to live. Did we listen? No. He gave us Jesus to flesh it out for us. Did we listen? No. We still sin. We do the things we know we shouldn't do. Some say, and this is a legitimate concern, Steve, I hear what you're saying, but I'm against physical violence. And I do not want to perpetuate the cycle of human violence, you know, physical violence. Now, I say that, you know, we are smart enough to know what's the difference between just violence. Like if somebody just doesn't like you and wants to hit you and hurt you, I think we're smart enough to figure out that's one thing. And your parents telling you in a measured, informed way, honey, if you cross this line, I'm going to spank your butt. I think we are smart enough to understand that. And that's why she loves me. And that's why she doesn't touch fans. And that's why she's sitting in the room today. But some people just don't have the stomach for it. Don't want to do it. I respect that. And so we say, I don't want to perpetuate the cycle of physical violence. So I'm going to ground my kid. That's the punishment. You got to find some kind of pain. You know, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. You got to figure out. Now, my problem with grounding is that not only are you grounding your teenage daughter, you're grounded, young lady, but you're also grounding you, mom, and dad. And you're trapped in the house with a sullen teenager. And that is bad. Plus, here's what's happened. You ground your kid, no friends for a week, don't go anywhere for a week, no phone for a week. You know what they do? They go upstairs, they open their drawer, and they take out their burner phone that you don't even know they have. And they're like, they're happy as a clam. Am I right? Am I right? They're not. They're like, no, we totally don't know what you're talking about. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, my Aunt Kay was babysitting with me one time, and she told me, Steve, you can go out and play, but don't cross the street. Now, why did she say that? That was the boundary she said. She didn't want me to cross the street because of cars and whatnot. Don't cross the street. What's the first thing I did? Cross the street with my burner phone. I crossed the street, of course. And so my Aunt Kay, my mom's sister, sweet. I mean, her nickname was Monkey. She was I love her then. I love her now. She brought me back in the house. I told you not to cross the street. And she got after me. She wore me out with her belt. And then she started crying. And she took me for ice cream. I love my Aunt Kay then. I love her now. Spanking is okay. Now, if you can't do it properly, don't you dare do it. Child abuse is the worst. And if it ever crosses over that line, that's toxic, and that should be put in jail. But spanking your kid is okay. I know that's controversial. Endure hardship as discipline, it tells us in verse 7. You know, God introduces pain in our lives to teach us. It's not because he wants us to just, I just want to see these guys fry a little bit. I just want to see him hurt a little bit. That's not God. We know that, and that's not a good parent. God introduces pain into our life, and sometimes he does it with hardship. Hardship. You know, sometimes our lives are just hard. It's like, you know, I think some of us, we kind of feel like, and I know I've felt this at times in my life, that, you know, my life, what it is really is just a never-ending series of things that I have to do that I don't want to do. That's my life. It's just one thing after the other of things I don't want to do. I have to get up in the morning. I have to fight traffic on the way to work. And then I have to go to work. And I have to put up with my boss's malarkey. And then I have to fight traffic on the way home from work. And then I have to, when I hit the door, answer the question, how's your day? When I've told her a million times, give me 5 minutes before you ask me how's my day. But I have to, my day was whatever, and then answer the question. And then you have to watch what you eat at dinner. It's hardship. Here's your grilled chicken. Here's your cauliflower. Here's 3 blueberries for dessert. No dessert for you, tubby. No dessert for you. And then I watch 2 innings of the ball game, and then I have to put the kids to bed. And see, it's like just a never-ending, and then you have to get up and do it again the next day. It's a never-ending series of things I don't want to do. Now, understand this. God is probably not going to change your situation right now. What God will change is your attitude about doing those things. I get to get up this morning. It's way better than the alternative of dying in my sleep. I get to be in the car by myself for 45 minutes and I could turn off the radio and turn off everything and pray and think about my relationship with God. I get to go to work because they give me a nice paycheck for doing things that I, at least at one point in my life, I was halfway interested in. And then I get to have a boss, and surely there's some good things about him I can think about. Then I get to come home, and I get to communicate with my wife, and I get to tell her how my day was. I get to do these things, not I have to do. I mean, you've been given a wife who loves you and likes spending time about you and who wants to know how your day was. And you get to tell her. And then you get to eat your grilled chicken and your blueberries because you're excited about taking care of your temple and getting in shape. That's something you're happy about. And then you get to put your kids to bed. You get to do that. Do you know how much money I would pay today if I knew that tonight at bedtime, I could take the 6-year-old Catherine and put her to bed? Do you know how much to be able to go back, you know, and you walk in her little room with the pink walls and the little pink lampshade and the little pink pictures on the wall, and she's sitting on the bed, Daddy, I can't wait to tell you about everything that happened, and she's so sweet and so amazing and just like the most precious little pearl you've ever been given. And then you talk about her day and you pray. Or what I used to do with Jackson, I would draw Pokemon. I could take a blank sheet of paper and I could draw a Pikachu really good. Jigglypuff really good. Snarfalopagus, whatever it was, I could draw it. That was our routine. But do you know how much money I'd pay to be able to take the 6-year-old Jackson and put him to bed tonight? How wonderful would that be? Because I'm telling you, time goes by quick. They won't be in the house very long. They'll be getting in their car. Hang with me, Tim. They'll be getting in their car and going off to college soon. And you will miss those days, man. You will miss those days of a 6-year-old that you, now you got the sullen 18-year-old. But man, that dreamy little six-year-old, I mean, you know, so it's like God's probably not going to change the things you have to do because you have to do them. That's part of life. We get to heaven, we just get to hang. We'll just play up there. But on earth, there's toil, there's labor, there's things we've got to do. God's probably not going to change the things you've got to do, but he can change the things you want to do. And see, as fathers, and as we celebrate fathers, just think about everything that God has given you and how he's loved you, how he's disciplined you, how he's shaped your life, how he's reasoned with you, how he's allowed you to have periods of pain in your life, because pain is such a good teacher. Man, you learn so much about yourself. You learn so much about your relationship with God. And you know, what I want to do with my kids is I want to model for them the characteristics of what a father should be like. More to the point, I want to model for them what the characteristics of a loving father in heaven should be like. And I fall short. But my kids have seen me kicked in the teeth and laying in the gutter. They've seen that. They walked in and I'd just be weeping. And it kind of freaked them out. You know, it's like, what's up with Dad? What's he crying about? My kids have seen me, but you know what else my kids have seen? My kids have seen me get up. My kids have seen me rub some dirt on it. And my kids have seen me shake it off. And see, that's all we can hope for from a father. Today is a day. Just love your father. Call him on the phone. If they're not with you anymore, say a prayer. Just, you know, talk to your dad. You know, just let him know how much you care. And if you are lucky enough to be in the same place, you're going to be sharing a meal with your dad today. Get over the awkwardness of it. If you're a teenager, a kid or something, and really talk to your dad. Just say, you know, you're great. Thank you very much. You are dismissed.